as ranking man, it was mandatory that I be the one who led and gave all the commands and cadences to the group. And Lord in mercy, I had to go back and brush up and look at all that stuff. And to make it worse, I did a horrible job. Horrible. And the more I practiced, you know, we had to go out and practice that every day. And then it comes time for the final review, you know. And they had divided us into four sections. And I was the ranking man over the whole kit and caboodle. But they made me the leader of one section. And the sections all competed for the coveted award. Well, the group I led was the worst you have ever seen in your life. We were less than pathetic. I'm just not a drill master. Never have been, never will be. So toward the end of the, we were getting down toward the time of the final march around the last day before we graduated. And so I went to the commandant and I said, "Sir, I want to request that you allow," and we had a drill master that was in our in the group I was supposed to lead. And I said, "I'd like to decline my right to lead this flight and let him do it." Well, in about three sessions, he whipped us into fantastic shape. And I really thought that it was a failure on my part, and I really felt bad about it. But do you know they gave me an award for being unselfish, in being willing to relinquish my position of leadership, and they gave me an award for it. That's one of the few times in history that a coward ever got an award. But I never will forget that. And that was not why I did it. I did it because I was ashamed of the fact I couldn't drill them, you know, but they thought that was an act of unselfish leadership. Well, I never told them the difference. We talked about Psalm 89, 34, 35. "My covenant will I not break, nor alter the thing that has gone out of my lips, once I have sworn by my holiness that I will not lie unto David." We are under the Davidic covenant. It's a covenant of mercy and grace. And I went through all this in Hebrews 6, 16 through 20, and talked about how God had sworn by himself that he would make sure that which hope we have is an anchor of the soul, both sure and steadfast, which entereth into that within the veil, whether the forerunner is for us entered, even Jesus. That's the covenant of David. It's a covenant of mercy because David was the son of direct descendant of Seth, and Jesus was a direct descendant of David, and he is to sit on David's throne. Then I went through Psalm 89, 36 through 37, pointed out how his seed shall endure forever. Jesus Christ, the seed of Almighty God, formed in the womb of the Virgin Mary by an act of Almighty God himself with the seed of a woman. And his throne is the sun before me. It shall be established forever as the moon and as a faithful witness in heaven. And then we went into Luke 1, 32, 33 and showed very clearly where it said, "And he shall reign over the house of Jacob forever," referring to Jesus as the son of David, "and of his kingdom there shall be no end." Then we started to talk about his kingdom and the marvelous things about it. And we had gotten all the way down past Malachi 4, 1 through 3. We had talked a great deal about that. And finally we stopped right here. We stopped in Isaiah 66, 22-24. And we're going to start right there. We talked about what it meant with the Son of Righteousness arising in Malachi 4, 1-3. What it meant as growing up as calves of the stall in the millennial reign. And talked about how the wicked in the millennial reign would be corpses, dust, for dust thou art, to dust returneth. Shall be ashes on the soles of your feet in the day that I shall do this, saith the Lord of hosts. And he indicated that during this time of great tribulation, just before the millennium, he said, "For behold, the day cometh that shall burn as an oven, and all the proud, yea, and all that do wickedly, shall be stubble. It's going to burn them up. A lot of corpses lying around. A lot of bodies cremated into dust in the greatest geological upheaval the Jordan River Valley has ever seen. And the day that cometh shall burn them up, saith the Lord of hosts, that it shall leave them neither root nor branch. It means they won't have any descendants. What does that mean? It means they're going to be killed stone cold dead. And they won't be able to produce any offspring or propagate their name in the future. Now with that in mind, let's go back and take a look at Isaiah 66, 22 through 24. Now, when I was a younger man, everything that went on in the Middle East bothered me. Any semblance of war bothered me. I remember when Hitler invaded Poland in 1939. I was 7 years old. And my uncle had to go into the war, my dad. A lot of my relatives went into the war. And at that time, there was a fear that Germany might win the war and that our country might be taken over. At least that was part of the fear. And as a young man, I was scared to death. And then in 2 years later, I remember when the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor. I remember it quite well. We were listening to it on the radio. And I remember how all the young men, women in this country had to go into the war. And I remember there was great fear and anxiety and concern. And all this is certainly the way it should be and the way it was. I remember when the Korean conflict broke out and I was scared to death of going in the army and getting on the ground and being killed as an infantryman. So I got very patriotic and rushed down and joined the Air Force. And I remember when Vietnam broke out. And I really didn't want to go. And I could have gotten out of it, but I figured I owed my dues. And so I went over there and went through a year of scare. Well, since that happened, I have become a very serious student of the Word of God. I wasn't before that. But I wanted to know, is this all true? I believed it. I practiced it. I was saved. I believed what God said. But I wanted to just look at all these things I believed and why I believed them. And I wanted to do it objectively. So I began my trek on doing this. And as I did, I was amazed, dumbfounded. You'll never know an experience knowing that God's Word is true if you don't study it and if you don't compare it and what the different prophets say with one another. I've tried to be objective and honest and straightforward and not to be brainwashed by something that might not be true. And being objective, I have tried desperately to look at it and say, now, I don't want to believe this just because that's what I already believe. But I have discovered, since Vietnam, that it is absolutely true, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, that whole Bible. It would have been absolutely impossible for some 40 different men, writing over a 1,500 to 1,600 year period, to have come together and put these things together when many of them never met one another. They lived in different time periods. Well, why am I telling you all this? For one reason only. All this stuff that's going on in the Middle East, everything that happens over there, it's not that I don't care less, but I don't control that. I can't control that. I don't want to control it. I don't want to make the decisions about it. But I've learned one thing. Whether you believe it or not, accept it or not, certainly I want you to. But I know it's true. God's in control. God is absolutely in control. Whether we attack Iraq or not, whether Iraq gets a new government, whether France and Russia and Germany have their way or don't have their way, whether we get a new resolution, no matter what happens over there, this I know for sure. I know for sure God's in control. I know something else for sure. Those Islamic nations, regardless of whether we replace Saddam Hussein, or whether we replace the regime of Saddam Hussein, they're going to hate us more and more and more. I spent a lot of time in Europe, traveled all over it, was there in Morocco and what was then French Morocco, 52 and 53, and traveled all across North Africa and in the Holy Land. I know the people from that time up to the present time because I worked with many of them. I trained many of their officers, went to school with many of their officers. I know the people in that area, and I know the people in Europe. If there is one country in Europe that I have never had any use for whatsoever, it's France. This isn't something that's based on what's happening lately. I've known the French for a long time. The French have been diabolically jealous of this country ever since the end of World War II. And the Germans now are becoming the same way. Now, I'm going to tell you what's going to happen there, and it's based on the Bible. And what you're seeing there right now, across what I know call the old world, is something that you can hang your hat on. France has recently made a $60 to $70 billion deal with Iraq to develop their oil fields in southern Iraq. Whether they are allowed to fulfill this contract depends on whether or not Saddam Hussein is still in power. Saddam Hussein is no fool. He's playing every card he's got. All of the nations that are opposed to the United States attacking Iraq, all of them, every one of them, have been sending trade ambassadors into the Middle East like mad. This isn't something I made up. This is something I've watched. I read Arab newspapers constantly. I read European newspapers constantly. I know who makes what deals. I know who sends trade representatives to the Middle East and what they're doing. Russia is in trouble economically. Their economic collapse that caused the demise of the Soviet Union has put them in a position to where they absolutely must recover economically. That's what caused their demise and their downfall. Putin or any other Russian leader is interested in one thing. He's interested in self-preservation. When Adam fell in the Garden of Eden, all of a sudden he and Eve looked down and they were shocked because of the complete transformational change in their attitude, opinion, and the way they looked to one another. Since that time, their fallen state has been passed down to all mankind. This is not a theory. It's not a hypothesis. It's not an idea. It's not a premise. It's a fact. We are all self-centered, every one of us. There are no exceptions. There's not one of you sitting out there that is not self-centered. I am self-centered. Every human being on this earth is self-centered. And if you can't face your own self-centeredness, you'll never understand yourself, and you'll never understand world politics. Everything on this planet revolves around what is known as national interest. Am I saying that's bad? No. It's natural. Natural man. Every human being on this earth is self-centered. Myself certainly included. I'm probably more self-centered than most. But it's amazing to me the number of people that never do see themselves as what they are. We always tend to do things that's in our own best interest. But we try to rationalize it and make it look like that when we're doing it in our self-interest, that we're really doing it for the good of others. Now, motherly instincts sometimes go against self-interest. Fatherly instincts for their children, both mother and father, go against self-centeredness. But in the end, they are our children, and it is a form of self-centeredness. Jesus Christ is the only man who ever walked on this earth that was not self-centered. He was other person-oriented. No other man's ever lived like him. Unfortunately, since we're the way we are, when you group us together and put us together, you've got a bunch of self-centered people. Well, what are you going to have? Self-centered nations. What is a self-centered nation? Everything it does is based on self-interest, self-preservation. You say, well, Brother Michael Murray, that's only natural. I know. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying that's the way it is. France has all kinds of economic developments going on in Iraq and Iran, and Saddam Hussein has given them oil deals that are unbelievable. They are so heavily balanced in the favor of France. It's unbelievable. And Saddam Hussein only had one motive in giving it to them and counterbalancing it, where it's so lopsided that France gets all the advantage and Iraq gets nothing. And he's done that with Russia and China also. And Iran is now having their actual development of their first nuclear plant carried out and produced by the Russians, and they're paying an enormous price for it. Financial price. It was Russia who went into Iraq and built their first nuclear plant. Russia did it. The Iraqis went in and blew it up. And that ended their nuclear plant, at least supposedly. Everything in the world is self-interest. All the nations do everything for national interest. Well, what is national interest? Let me put it to you this way, what it is and what it's become. National interest is whatever keeps the existing government in power. That's it. National interest is based on whatever keeps the existing government in power. Now, I'll tell you what Russia's after. I'll tell you what China's after. And I'll tell you what France is after and Germany is after. They're after all of those billions and billions and billions of Arab dollars gotten from the sale of oil that they will receive for assisting those Arab nations in the development, the industrial development of their countries. That's what they're interested in, and that's all they're interested in. If the United States attacks and takes Iraq over, all of their oil deals, all of their billions and billions of dollars that they're counting on to booster up their economies so that Putin, the Chinese leaders, the Russian leaders, the European leaders, they can stay in power if they can keep their people prosperous. Now, a lot of people deny this, but I'm sorry, it's the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. You can have a government that is corrupt. You can have a government that is dishonest. You can have a government that is immoral. You can have a government full of lesbians and homosexuals. You can have a government that is absolutely ungodly. But, and here comes national interest, but, if they can provide that nation prosperity, material prosperity, bo-do-do-di-o-do, tippecanoe and Tyler too, if you can make them materially prosperous, give them an economy that is booming, and give them savings that are astronomical, and a market that is climbing and provides a future where they can look at it and say, when I get old, I'll have something to take care of me. If you can do that, I don't care what your moral character is, and they don't either. It's the prosperity that they're after. What is that? Self-centeredness, self-interest. Now, the first reaction is, well, that's only natural. Exactly. It's natural man. That's what all the governments of this world function on. Well, Brother Michael Murray, do you think President Bush is after the oil? I think it's a side issue. I think he'd love to have control of it. But that is not why he wants to go into Iraq. Whatever you think of President Bush, whether you think he's a village idiot, a clown, misguided, whatever you think of the man, I've watched him ever since he went into office. He may be all those things, but I honestly believe he wants to do something that's necessary for us to continue as a nation without the threat of constant terror attacks. Now, whether you're willing to pay the price or not is up to you individually. In this country, we've got two groups of people that are vehemently opposed to the opinions of the others. And both don't like each other. And you've got a nation full of mothers that are scared to death for their sons. Listen, I lived through three wars, participated in two of them. If we had not stopped the Nazi regime, this country would be under Nazi or Japanese control. The mothers didn't want them to go then. You say, well, that's only natural. That's very true. Never having been a mother, I can't sense the emotions of what a mother feels about her son going into war. My mother, it almost killed her. She didn't want me to go to Vietnam. She thought the war was wrong. I understand that, and I don't try to put a nose in anybody's, put a ring in anybody's nose that believes that. But there are some things that are necessary. We had to stop Hitler's aggression. We had to stop Japanese aggression. We had to stop Italian aggression. We had to stop it. It was necessary. We hung back and didn't go into that war for a long time. The League of Nations came out of the Versailles Treaty, and Woodrow Wilson's the one that started it. But our Congress wouldn't vote to go into it. We stayed out of it. We went isolationist. In 1933, Adolf Hitler rose to power and began to manufacture weapons of war. That was strictly forbidden, absolutely forbidden, by the Versailles Treaty of 1918. It was completely wrong. He had agreed not to do that. In 1933, he was rising to power and starting to develop the weapons. All the League of Nations had to do was to go in there in 1933, take Germany over. Been a very simple thing. Militarily, they were weak, pitifully weak. They were in a depression. But the League of Nations wouldn't do it. So pretty soon, Hitler gets a few weapons, and he marches in and takes the Sudetenland between France and Germany. Just took it. Said it belonged to Germany. The League of Nations did nothing. France did nothing. Mothers all over the world said, we don't want another war. We don't want a repeat of World War I. We don't want to lose our sons and daughters. It's wrong. It's wrong. It's wrong. It's wrong. It's wrong. We want peace, 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 peace. They cried about it. I remember all this. I was born in 32, and I started to pay attention to this when I was about 5 years old, believe it or not. Then in 1935, he went into Czechoslovakia. Said the northern part of it was mostly German, and he had a right to take it. His weaponry had not developed to the point of sophistication that it later did. France, England, you know, they could have gone in and stopped it right there. But they didn't do it. They let him have Czechoslovakia, just gave it to him. In 1938, Neville Chamberlain went down to Germany from Britain. By 38, he's developing pretty good weaponry. And he went to from Britain to Hitler. And Hitler signed an agreement with him, promising if he would let them have the rest of Czechoslovakia, he would never again take any more territory. And Neville and Chamberlain came back to France and England and said, peace in our time. Mothers won't have to give up their sons. We won't have to fight. In 1939, Hitler invaded Poland. But this time he had the strongest military machine on the surface of this earth, and we let it happen. And because of this, American mothers and mothers all over the world paid a horrifying price of millions and millions of lives lost to a madman, a maniac called Hitler. It happened. And 6 million Jews were killed. Now we have a League of Nations. It's called the United Nations, and we're part of it. And Saddam Hussein signed a treaty and promised he would give up the weapons of mass destruction, chemical, biological, and nuclear. For 12 years, the United Nations has passed resolution after resolution after resolution after resolution after resolution after resolution after resolution, demanding that he disarm. Saddam Hussein is an absolute madman. It's the regime that has to be replaced. But now Hollywood and the world says, peace, peace, we must have peace. At what price? At what price? The price of freedom is vigilance. If we don't stop Saddam Hussein now, and they declare him weapon free, that devil has got that stuff stuck so far on the ground over there, you couldn't, the Lord is the only one that knows where it is. But we've got him. They keep impeccable records, impeccable weapons. Where is all this anthrax? Tons of it. And BX gas, where is it? Well, if and when we attack Iraq, we'll find out. You say, oh, Brother Michael Murray, think of all those countless numbers of American troops that are going to die over there. Listen, if we don't stop this now, and that devil keeps that stuff, we better think of our own national interest. Our national interest is in what protects the lives of the men and women of this country. I don't think Bush is after the oil. You say, well, do you think it's a part of his plan? Yes. I think Bush would like to have control of the oil. I think every oil company in the United States would like to have control. But that's not the primary reason. Our national interest is the preservation of life. Now, I don't usually try to make a political statement, but I am now. If we don't stop Saddam Hussein now, we're going to be in the same boat that Europe was in, because the League of Nations wouldn't do anything about it. Listen, I got a grandson going over there. I've been through two wars. Mothers, I can't tell you how you feel. I know you feel differently from me, and I understand your feelings. I'm not unfeeling about it. But there are times when you have to do what's right. This guy is worse than Hitler. Listen, the problem is not the possession of weapons of mass destruction. It's who's got control of them. We've had weapons of mass destruction ever since World War II, and we haven't used them. Russia hasn't used them. Great Britain hasn't used them. France hasn't used them. Even India and Pakistan haven't used them. Israel's had them for 35 years, and she hadn't used them. Wake up! The problem is the regime in Iraq. It's the regime. He's a madman. He'll use them. And if we don't stop this right now, a lot of more lives are going to be paid in the future than are going to be paid in the war in Iraq right now. You cannot deal with madmen in a logical, reasonable way. So, it's 5 till. Well, you know, that didn't have a lot to do with Isaiah. Anyway, we'll just talk about that some other time.